okay with the creative team of 1 second at a time battling the monster of addiction is a feature film play, the Documentary Film Festival. We're with Tim, who is the director, and with Michael, who is the lead. It's a story about his daughter. I got it, guy, right off the bat. I never do this, but this is a very personal story for me as well. So I see a lot of movies about this, and sometimes I'm like, I roll my eyes. I'm 18 years sober, so basically, one step at a time, basically. But sometimes I roll my eyes at like that. Oh, that doesn't make any sense to me. But this film got it, and I'm very proud to show it. And I'm proud to even talk to you guys today. So thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank
Thanks for
you.
having us.
Thank you, Matthew, for having us.
Okay, so let's talk about. Okay, so Tim, you're the director of the film. This is a very well done documentary. Nice, like from a filmmaking standpoint, from a cinematic standpoint, from a storytelling standpoint, just a really well done film. We can get to that in a bit, but I'm just curious about how you guys met. How did you guys first meet to get the jumpstart this project?
Well, I had met Tim indirectly. I saw his film Break Every Chain and I was really moved by it. It's a true story about a police officer, John Hickory, and John Hickory unfortunately has trauma early in his life. He starts drinking and he almost commits suicide, and he's a police officer still today in West Virginia. So that moved me, how he told this story, Matthew, and you know how this disease is so misplayed, and the stigma that we don't really see the people and what's causing it. It's not like you wake up one day and want to drink a case or put a needle in your arm. But I saw that, and Tim did a beautiful job at sharing the story, and it got millions of views. But what really took me was the impact. They have had thousands of first responders, police officer families respond and say, "Thank you for seeing us. Thank you for displaying this in a way that makes us feel human. And thank you for having our back." So that's really what I was looking for. I was looking for the impact and the quality and the reality of what really happens behind the scenes, not to just that person who's affected directly, but to the family.
Yeah. And so your mission, you wanted to make a film. Like you're searching for great directors, or you're searching for like for someone like Tim, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think media storytelling is the most powerful way of inspiring and providing hope. And I've been blessed in so many ways, and one of the biggest blessings was him and his team dropping on my lap at the right time, because it was a little overwhelming to take this on without having the right team.
Well, it's a little overwhelming for Tim. Basically, Tim, what do you remember your first interaction with Michael? You just
Oh,
made this
gosh.
film. I'm sure you're a little bit tired and figuring out what project you want to do next, because that's what all filmmakers do. They're always looking ahead. Where was your headspace when you first met Michael?
Well, when I heard his story about his daughter, I connected to it immediately. It was such a moving story. And at the time, his daughter had passed only maybe about a year at that moment. So it was still very raw and fresh, for him. So it was really, I mean, we were really moved by Mike, by his story. And I just thought, man, somebody needs to tell the story in a way that's it has to be done right, and that's where I was like, man, I really want to tell this story. I connect with it, and I know that we can do a good job with it. So that's it was great. It was great that we hit it off and we connected that way.
And then, so where were you? Like, were you like intrigued to make another film? Were you looking for other projects at the time when you met him?
Yeah, actually, as a matter of fact, I was on a feature. I was like, okay, I might have to do this feature. So there was a time crunch between, okay, let's do that. And the feature ended up getting delayed or whatever. So it ended up working out. But at the time I was in the middle. I was actually on a separate feature where I was doing like pre-production stuff. And when I got the phone call, and it's like, okay, I don't know how we're gonna do this, but we'll figure it out, so yeah, it was a tough balance of schedule and that kind of thing. But the timing was just perfect. We had it just the right amount of time to get it done.
So then this is so then what how was the process? You met with Michael, then you just started mapping out a script and mapping out the themes of
Yeah,
the
so we
film.
met. Yeah, so what happened was we met Mike, And we recorded him. I interviewed him for 4 or 5 days, asking him all the questions. You know, give me the story. You know, let's hear it again. And just getting like the raw, you know, digging down deep into what is the story about. You know, okay, what happened? Very specifically, what did this look like? What did that look like? What did this feel like? You know, what did that feel like? And we recorded everything. So as he's telling us all this, it took, I don't know, it was like a week, you know, that we took doing this. And then, so then what we did is we took all that information that we got and we transcribed it. And now we start, so then we started working on a script. And I think it was probably a week that we worked on a script and we put that together and we used, you know, his own words because we already had him recorded. So we could,
Yeah.
you know, we knew kind of like what he was going to say and that kind of thing. And then we just organized it in a way, as you saw. And then digging deep to like, man, you know, I'm more on the feature side than I am on the doc side. So for me, it was important to make this visually compelling, you know, to make this entertaining and that kind of thing. And so that's why I was like, man, let's dig in deep. Let's try to find a metaphor, you know, for what this disease is like. That's what we really need is a really strong metaphor. So it took my writing partner Danny Fajardo, and I we both worked on this together, and we you know, that's how we came up with the underwater metaphor. You know, it's like, man, it's like a monster. It's like you're drowning. It's like you're in darkness. It's like you're suffocating, you know. And that's when we started, you know, leaning into this. And kudos to Mike, who was open to, you know, something that's a little more creative, a little more out of the box. You know, he was like, yeah, do it. It's great. You know, whereas I think other people might have been like, what does a somebody drowning have anything to do with my daughter's story? You know,
Well,
so
yeah.
it was kudos to Mike, you know.
And
The
Matt, we
films,
were
yeah, that's why I was. Go ahead.
Matt, we were pitched ideas and, you know, the conventional ideas, and Tim won me over, not just by the idea, but the process. You know, I didn't feel comfortable just being pitched ideas for the normal doc because this is so powerful. I mean, you know, congrats for 18 years and thank you for having such a great cinematic and head about you, because to tell this story for me was cathartic too. I wanted to, there was two things that I wanted out of this, the healing and the impact. The healing for me and my family and the impact to others, right? And the normal pitch was nothing like him. He won me over on watching his film, which was a film, a feature film, not a doc, and also on the process. Because I said, what's gonna happen? He says, well, I'm gonna tape you for a week. And I'm like, ooh. Because you know, I wanted to heal, which means, oh shoot, I'm 65-year-old Latino male. I'm not wired to be vulnerable and compassionate. This is going to really be, and you know what the gift has been? Understanding the intentionality that you and my daughter, when she was sober, have to walk with every day. That's the gift of this for me and for others, that I could display to the world the power of letting go, surrender to a higher power, and walking around with this intentionality to serve every day. And have gratitude. But it wasn't easy. Like the first week, Tim, Danny, and I, they just sat there and they were wonderful. And the deeper we got into the week, the more invasive we got into the questions, right? And the set, I believed in them. I believed in the process. And they came back. And I'm not one to be okay, this is good. I came in, and Tim forgot this. He was very nice. I came in with like 40 folders. When they came back with the script,
Yeah.
and Danny was looking at Tim, and he was basically going to lay out the boundaries, like, "Hey, Mike, just let us go through the script." And they sold me. I mean, we made how many edits? Like two or three edits to a 57 or 58-page script,
Wow.
because they took the time to hear me,
Yeah.
see my daughter, and do this in a beautiful way where they didn't have a preconceived way of doing this. They wanted to honor my daughter and have the impact. And I saw what they did in the other film, and I said, okay, I'm gonna let you guys go now and do this. Like,
Yeah.
so they sold me on just the delicacy they had and just the trust that we built through this process. There's an enormity of trust because this is such a personal story.
Yeah, no, it's like you have to understand too that you're brave for doing this because this is a very you're being exposed. Like Michael, you're being exposed in this film. One of the first lines in the film, you're talking about your regrets. You're talking about like all the, and that doesn't, you know what I mean? You can heal that, but it doesn't, you know, regret sometimes or most times doesn't go away, right? But you're able to share your feelings as you said, like a 65-year-old Latino man, isn't like your words are not supposed to do that, but you did it. And it's like that's the brave that's bravery right there, right? Like, were you scared? You must have been a little bit scared, I'm assuming.
No, I thank you, Matthew, for those kind words. I don't even know, scared. I was frozen. I was in a prison, my own. I'm going to talk to you like I'm in recovery, and I'm not, but I was. I hit that wall, and again, I was
Sure.
honest about that when I would go to Al-Anon, and I'm looking around. I'm like, nobody else is drinking or using because I'm besides myself, and would use the bottle to show. I would hit my wall, and I was starting to be out of order, right? Because I was enabling and running around and rescuing and not tending to my own self-care. So it was an honesty for me to look in the mirror and accept the fact that my daughter passed. And at the end of the day, that the families alone are probably the worst offenders and hurting their loved ones. Not intentionally, but not intentionally, you know? And I'm not pointing a finger. I'm just sharing our own story, right? And at the end of the day, you know, the gift that my daughter gave me, and also the curse, was having to go through 60 plus journals, Matthew. And it's, Daddy, I love you more than anybody, but Dad, I'm gonna also hold you more responsible and accountable than anybody. So, and then he sold me on all the arrows in his quiver as a feature film guy, because he was like, you know, like, I'm gonna animate, and I'm gonna drone, and I got to see how great he was at these things. But I'm like, okay, all right, I'm gonna get out of your way to do all this and reenact. And like, who reenacts in a documentary? And I had people from critics from the documentary world go, how dare he reenact? And I trusted them. We walked through the process early, and I let him do his thing. And I was taken away. Like, when we first saw the film, we brought the family in and the board. And to this day, I've seen it 7 or 8 times now. I am a mess every time I watch it.
Sure. I think a lot of people are a mess. I think that's what the effectiveness in like it's guts. Like it's a gutsy film. Like I see a lot of documentary films, and using using reenactments, as you say, is you know, people use it a little bit, but he kind of used it during the entire movie. Like he got a cast without dialogue, right? Like he used your words, he used your voice, but basically he hired a character to play you, basically, right? How was that process?
I'm going to let Tim go with that. I think I'm going to say one thing. I think a little bit he was protecting me as I was kind of transforming after tragedy, Matthew, because the set was, we were a year. I mean, the blood was still not dry, and it's still not today. I mean, I'm transforming at a big rate where I have somewhat peace and joy in my life now, where I could never have even looked, you know, like, when I look at where I was a year ago or 2 years ago when we started, it's nothing like where I am today. To be able to talk about this, I mean, I feel bad for Tim's wife, who was transcribing a bunch of the, editing the script, editing the actual production. And I mean, the curse words and the pain and the angst. And, I mean, you can ask Tim the difference between 2 years ago, a year ago, when we showed the first screening, and today, when we're about to announce the world that, that this is going out with our other media. But it's been a process. And really, yeah, I mean, you let go and you surrender to higher power, but they were part of this healing journey for me. And not just the way they told the story, but just how they handled me. And they go, Mike, we're going to do these reenactments. And what he was really saying is, we're going to get professional actors to do the things that we don't want you to do. But I'll hand off to Tim on that.
So it
Yeah,
was
the
casting.
casting process. Go ahead.
I was gonna say casting. You had a cast.
Yeah, so it was kind of funny. We have to find somebody who plays a younger version of Mike, and of course it's like, oh, what's he gonna say, and but no, he was very accommodating. And we had some we the lead the girl playing Christine. She was the hardest one to find. We had to find somebody who looked a lot like Christine, who had that same, spirit about her. And we it was kind of rigorous trying to find that person. And we found Beatrice, who's very talented, and she did an amazing job. And we found her. She's from Miami, so we actually scoured pretty much all of the East Coast looking for her. We were just amazed at, you know, she was, it was one of her first productions, but man, she was talented and she had what we needed, you know, and she was so accommodating, so kind and generous. All the actors were, I think everyone understood that this was like a meaningful project, that this was something that really, was important, you know, so everybody worked really hard to be accurate and do the right thing.
So Tim, like the way you, you broke some rules of documentary filmmaking here, and the way, cause the first 8-9 minutes is his voiceover, but you're using reenactments. And then you switch the script about, I think maybe 9-10 minutes in, where then you show like her friends, you show her mom, you show Mike in the interview. And then it's sort of like the audience has to immediately figure out, okay, these are real people. We're not, it was like, how did, like when you're in editing, were you worried about that transition, those transitions you were making in the film?
I was, because the leaning on the reenactments was a choice. And I, to be completely honest, I wasn't sure if it was going to work or not. You know, I was like, okay, I think it's going to work. Let's just do it. And once I had shot one of the scenes and we edited it together and, you know, we put Mike's voice on it, I was like, man, this is working. This is going to work. This is really going to work. And that's when we got more excited about it. It's like, man, this is great. It's going to work. And I did worry about, you know, that transition, but I think, you know, audiences are smart. So I think they pick up on it pretty quick. And I think audiences appreciate, you know, having something that is more interesting to look at than just maybe a talking head the entire time. You know, I don't think most people don't really, they want something that, you know, give them, you know, something to latch on to. And especially these stories are so dramatic. You know, they're so dramatic. So, you know, leaning in on that reenactment aspect, I think helps you connect more with what was happening with the story. And you get to connect more with what he was feeling, you know, what those experiences were like. So, yeah, it was a choice. I'm glad it worked.
And then, so, Michael, I'm assuming you gave him, like, tons of photos, tons of, like, images of your past and with, obviously, your daughter, so he can kind of use throughout the film as well.
Yeah. I mean, going back to the selection of the Beatrice who played my daughter, that was a head turner.
Yeah,
you know,
must
we
have
were
been,
doing
yeah.
This film as well as doing other things for the charity, other initiatives and other producing other media. And we were in the middle of making that decision and we had reached out to the agent for a well-known Hollywood star, of course, out of budget, but not interested because we were this wasn't a big producer, right? And
yeah,
but we thought because of, you know, them being in recovery, it would be. And then we went to somebody very, very tenured, very experienced. And Tim and Danny made the wise choice. I was like not comfortable with that one. And I just said, you guys make the choice. And we went with somebody young, but talented, raw, like a diamond in the rough. And what I loved about it, she was eager to learn. Now I stayed out of the way. I mean, because for me, Matthew, it was hard, like, especially watching her scenes. I mean, you could say they were triggering, right? One moment, and you know, I'm here working upstairs in my office at home, and they were having a scene downstairs in our laundry room where it's extremely powerful. And I had to take a break because she was doing such an amazing job that she was being coached. And one thing Tim did with everybody is that he and his team made them better. And I think Tim is being humble and sharing, really the feel on a set was like a family. They realized how personal the story was. It wasn't just a, you know, a story that wasn't true. This was a true story. So they entered my home and my best friend's home and different sets or where my wife worked. She's a nurse and a professor for clinical nursing. A lot of the hospital scenes are there in their setting.
Yeah.
So there was a family feel like this is more than all of us. This affects 1 in 2 Americans. Everybody on the set had somebody they knew dealing with this. So there was a family feel, and yet there was an importance where even though there was a lot of talented people that were experienced, Tim had an idea and he was breaking a lot of documentary rule with people that mostly did films and they respected that. And I This was not a conventional, traditional thing at all. And I toot his horn all the time and say, because he's humble, we did it. Because there was a lot of doubts. I'm like, okay, let's do that. Okay. I didn't know.
So one of the things that you get in out of this film is that Christine extremely intelligent, right? Like there's a level of emotional intelligence and a level of it's like the way even her writing when she was 6 years old and like so it's like th this is one of the things that basically is there with addiction is that there's a lot of feelings, there's a lot of like thought. There's someone who's seeing the world from a macro, micro perspective. So there's a lot going on. And it's like it's you can see that within her brain, the way that Tim sets up the movie is that this is an extraordinary human being. Like not to sugarcoat her, you know what I mean? Basically, but it like it's seemingly that this was someone who was very special, right? So
Matthew, you hit it right on the head. I mean, the art brought the name of the movie. This is our horror art, and
Yeah.
we use a lot. I mean, just her, not just her written text, but her
Yeah.
art. Like, this is her emitting metaphors of insects, colonies of addicts, and trying to get out of the colony to achieve recovery. And how she, now remember, we said 20, but it was actually 28 facilities. We didn't want to say over 20. We said over 20 facilities, but we didn't want to give the real number in that it's not tenable, it's not viable, and almost seems hopeless.
Yeah.
But her journals were the treasure. And Tim was a genius in trying to figure out, I'd opine on what I thought was most important, but for somebody not in recovery, he did an amazing job. I like the animation one on the control. That took 10 days for, and I'll let him share that, to do whatever 1700 slides on how the disease controlled her, and that was a journal. That was journals. That was serious projects about how the disease controlled her and projects she'd do at different residential treatment facilities. And then the 3 years she was sober, she worked at a real high-end facility here in Tampa. So you could say she informally had a PhD in a lot of emotional intelligence, but it was trying to figure out how to use what she wrote in what place, and then Tim making great decisions on how to share that journal.
Yeah, one of the
Whether it
things that
be by
happened was he
Beatrice,
did
go
hand.
ahead.
One of the things that happened is Mike did hand off all the journals. We had them all scanned in, and I went through all of those and selected the ones that I just connected with, that I thought really helped tell her story. And I think that one where the animation happens is so harrowing that the way she wrote, writing from the perspective of the disease was just. It, to this day, every time I hear the words that, that are in that scene, it raises the hairs on my arms because it's so scary and so authentic and real. You can like she's really capturing what it feels like in a way that only somebody who's been there, who's seen it, can speak of, and I think that's her the way, like you said, the way she articulated things that it was that's what really brought that amazing perspective to the story is hearing her own words.
Yeah.
And I think that was part of this, what made this project so exciting to work on as well. We had such great material,
So I just want to quickly transition to your because the film is amazing and then we'll have a link on the podcast. 1 second at a time is the website. And in, as Michael said to me before the interview, it's more than just a film. There's always this, it's a gift that keeps, or it's a film that keeps on going, moving. And it's an amazing web. It's a really well put together website. There's a lot going on. And right from the bat, you guys have won a lot of awards. The film is doing well, let's
It's
just to say the
54
least.
film festivals. I would never,
Yeah.
what Tim said to me was two things when we hired him. I said, well, actually, the board asked him, they go, Tim, why do you want this project? He goes, impact, because this is such a powerful subject and I want to move people to inspire them. And two, I want to win film festivals. And I gave him a hug because he was being honest. But
Yeah.
we never thought it'd be 54 to date.
Yeah.
But one of the things I think you're mentioning the charity, before we get to the charity, was also using some of the people, because in Christine's case, she gave up hope, right? Which is something that unfortunately commonly happens by being re-traumatized and what this disease does to you. You don't feel you're worthy. You don't feel you can give, reach out to your higher power anymore. And yet in that darkness at the end, you could see that we moved to, and you could see the music and everything leading to the scene in Tennessee where we show Ashley Martin, which is one of the last people she meets at the last treatment facility that she's at 3 weeks before she passes. And in her darkness, there's Ashley saying that she saved my life so many times. So Christine was doing that service work even in her darkness. She may not have thought she was salvageable, even though we all knew that all she had to do was give it to her higher power. But she was still doing her magic and her work, and that's her legacy that, God called her up, and she's at peace now. But that magic will keep going. So what the charity is doing is trying to be true to what our mission is, and that's we want to produce media that inspires and provides hope. And one of the big things we wanted to look at was college recovery, because that is the most at-risk population group in the country. 18 to 45-year-olds, their biggest cause of death is drug overdose. You take that 18 to 25-year-old, and they're four times more apt to die from overdose. So we went to Florida State, my alma mater. There was a need there. There was a desire to build this LIFT recovery center, and I made a contribution with money, but more importantly, time. And we got to over 1,000 engagements the first year. We had 40 people in full-time recovery. And what I loved about it is we waited a year and Tim did a showcase. We shared the year of growth, and we're in the midst of sharing that with every college. And it's called Safety Net, helping college students, helping college kids, helping college students in recovery thrive. So what we did with that was we showed what we did at Florida State. It's very easy to replicate with alumni and faculty and administration buy-in, and we're sharing that with every college in the US.
It is interesting that like they like the you're 18, 19 years old and you have all these choices to make. What are you going to do with your life? And then you're going to go away to school and it's like you're not it's just so it's such a wacky world that we live in. It's like you like 18 you're 18, 19 years old, you're so vulnerable and you're so dumb. Like sorry, pardon, like I'm just speaking for myself. It's like you're like and this is the I 100% relate. It was like this is it gets you in so much trouble. And it's so interesting that this is how the system is set up, where like you're supposed to make all these choices when you're not even you don't even know who you are when you're like 18, 19 years old. And then someone says, oh, here, why don't you try this? And then why don't you try that? And then all of a sudden, if you have that DNA in your brain, or if you're depressed or whatever like that, then it's gonna skyrocket into some bad stuff. So sorry, that was my little speech there. I just like I you're 100% right. That's where everybody's vulnerable. And it's like it could be easily stopped. It could be easily taken care of, but you're helping in all your and you're with all your might too, Michael. So amazing. So yeah, this is like a fantastic film. So are you what in terms of the charity work, are you doing like public speaking? Are you doing like how are you like I'm just curious like what else are you doing to promote the film and promote the charity?
I did a one or two events. We did an event at Florida State with a bunch of colleges to share the film. We screened the film as well as Safety Net, and now Safety Net's going out to every college because we added a new piece to it, and it's a lot more powerful now. So that goes out to every college. And then the other thing we're doing with the charity is, I've got to be ready to figure out what happens next, because this film goes out to the world in a month, right? So I'm trying to keep one of the other things that I'm doing right now is, other than speaking it locally, is NAMI, the National Alliance of Mental Illness. I'm going to partake on a panel at their national conference. I did something locally in Florida where they did a panel. It was amazing. Somebody with lived experience like you, Matthew. A psychiatrist who heads up behavioral health and a major health insurer, and then myself, that shows the aspect of family disease. So we're going to show potentially both films at NAMI, because they have to do with the co-occurring, disorder of mental health and substance abuse. And And then we'll see what happens with the film. I think the film will dictate where I pick and prioritize those speaking engagements, because right now they're.
So, a couple more things. So we have also we have some inspirational stories that we've now have put out. There's a inspirational story about a lady called Jane who has an amazing story about recovery. And then we also just completed another small video to help people who are dealing with grief. Somebody like Mike who's lost a child. Like, what would you say to that person? So that's what this, it's a video kind of telling his lessons learned. And so that's the kind of content we're hoping to continue to generate, things to help people, inspire people, and to provide hope.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, listen, it's an amazing film, Tim. You're on your way. Like like you said, it's like you broke the rules, but you broke the rules wisely. And just from a filmmaking standpoint, and basically, Michael, it's so brave, and it's like I know obviously you don't want to be doing this in a sense where like you'd rather have your daughter alive and well, but. You know what I mean? But you're doing it, and you're basically making the world, not to sound cheesy, but you're making the world better, a better place by just being brave and basically sharing your story and sharing your fears and insecurities and vulnerabilities. We need to do that more often because, it's life is not easy, right?
No. And the one thing I learned, even though I've been through all this and, at the same time lost my mom and my dad thereafter. And I know now, look, with the same intention I mentioned before, that we're all going through something, Matt. So, I mean, that's what we're trying to do. It could be anybody, because there's that, you could be just anxious and depressed, and next thing you know, you're down that rabbit hole. So it is a message to many of us, not just one or two that wake up with somebody, a loved one dealing with. With alcohol and or drugs, it's for potentially anybody.
And I know you've said you've probably been told this before, but and you're all everybody's always going to have regrets, but I think you did more than 95% of parents would do. Like, from personal experience, I'm just letting you know, you did more than that. Like, so I think that you're in like the 5th percentile. So I think that I know you're always going to have regrets. And I'm just being honest with you, I'm just lucky. Like, there's a lot of luck involved with staying alive. And basically, I just happen to be lucky. Circumstances, white male-ish person, come on, like, you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of luck involved in who I am. So basically, of course you're gonna have regrets, but at the same time, like, I think you're an amazing father from
Thank you
my
so much, Matt. I
perspective.
appreciate that.
And Tim's, I think Tim can agree as well. So
Absolutely.
Matthew, so much. We don't get this many times, and we've had a couple interactions with a film festival, and it's nice to get somebody on your side that really knows it. We also love what you did for us in getting, I think it was five or six people to provide reviews. That was powerful. I loved each one saw different things,
Yeah.
and the way they summed them up was beautiful. I mean, we normally have reached out, we've reached out a couple, and we stopped trying to reach out and say, hey, what did you think about our film? How did it move you? Why did we win? What made us different? What resonated? And you guys did an amazing job. Thank you again for sharing that with us, with people who knew what they were talking about watching a film or a documentary. Thank you.
Of course. Well, we'll help promote the film in any way. Tim, let's talk again when you make your next film, because I think that there's going to be several of them in the future. And I appreciate your time and appreciate your candor. And great film, by the way. And yeah, Tim, keep breaking the rules.
Matthew, thank you so much for your
Appreciate it.
time.
Thanks for having us.
Bye.